8:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to this afternoon. If you've recently tuned in, a very good afternoon to you from me, Jonathan Swain. In a couple of minutes, the early music show, Catherine Botts, joined by harpsichordist Lawrence Cummings, Delma Tomlin, director of the National Centre of Early Music, and conductor Matthew Halls for a roundtable discussion about the future of early music performance in the UK. Also featured in the programme are recordings from this year's York Early Music Festival Young Artists Competition. That's in a couple of minutes after the news read by David Cornett.
The Labour leader Ed Miliband has urged the government to change course on the economy because he believes its austerity measures aren't working. He said the coalition was failing to meet its plans to reduce the budget deficit. Mr Miliband repeated his demand for a temporary cut in VAT to help boost the economy. The government has accused Mr Miliband of making a U-turn by promising that Labour would reduce the cap on tuition fees in England from £9,000 to £6,000. The university's minister, David Willetts, says Mr Miliband's idea looks cynical because his party voted against increases in fees last year. The Greek finance minister, Evangelos Venizelos, is due to meet the head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, in Washington later today to discuss his country's growing debt crisis. Reports suggest that the world's economic leaders have been working on plans to allow Greece to default on some of its debts and remain in the euro. Troops from Libya's National Transitional Council are stepping up their assault on Colonel Gaddafi's hometown of Sirte. They're moving through the desert and along Libya's main coast road. The Metropolitan Police say they're carrying out a thorough and painstaking investigation into a fire which killed a mother of five and her children at their home in northwest London. The blaze is not being treated as suspicious. A sixth child, a 16-year-old girl, remains in a critical condition in hospital. Gusty Spence, one of the founders of the Loyalist Ulster Volunteer Force, has died. He was 78. Spence was jailed for the murder of a Catholic civilian in 1966 and became UVF commander in the Mays prison. Sport, there's been another victory for Ireland in the Rugby World Cup. They beat Russia 62-12. But Scotland were narrowly defeated by Argentina 13-12. And the weather. Many places in England and Wales will have a dry, bright and rather warm day, but there's a wet and windy afternoon ahead for Northern Ireland and Scotland, where there could be gale force winds this evening. BBC News and Weather at approaching 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by David Cornett. Well, now on Radio 3, we join Catherine Botts for today's early music show.
Say what you like about the early music movement, it never stands still. The landscape's different for every emerging generation. From the early days, when everyone thought it was all about Krumhorns and Hirten Schalmei, when players were really finding their way into old techniques by trial and error, through the commercial expansion of period instrument playing led by the record companies and the CD revolution, to nowadays, when every music college worth its salt has an ambitious early music department. But what's on offer for the young early musicians of today and tomorrow? To discuss this important question, I'm joined by three knowledgeable and experienced guests. And to emphasise the excellence of today's young performers, all our music today comes from this year's York Early Music Festival Young Artists Competition. So before we talk, let's hear music from the first two finalists in the York competition. The four members of Quadro Melante, Georgia Brown, Bojan Cicic, Ibrahim Aziz and Mahan Esfahani come from Australia, Croatia, Malaysia and Iran, respectively. And they presented a programme of 18th century music inspired by Paris, ending with this by Telemann.
Thank you. My name is Shani Le Saulnier.
And I am Nadja Le Saulnier.
We formed the harpsichord duo Le Petit Concert Baroque. We are coming from France, but studying in the Schola Cantorum Basiliensis in Switzerland.
We are sisters. We grew up together, we did all our studies and musical life together. Of course, in first we started to play the normal piece wrote for two harpsichords.
But afterwards, we had the opportunity to work with many singers and in many chamber music ensembles in the Schola Cantorum Basiliensis. And we love so much this music.
Thank you.
Le Petit Concert Baroque playing the aria Venti Turbini, arranged for two harpsichords, in the final of the York Early Music Festival Young Artists Competition in July. Now, as I said at the top of the programme, I'm joined today by a panel of three eminent names from the early music world, and it's time now to introduce them. Firstly, from our studio in York, the director of the National Centre for Early Music, Delma Tomlin. And with me here in our London studio is Lawrence Cummings. He's a harpsichordist, organist and conductor. He's the new artistic director of the Göttingen Handel Festival, so he's a man of many parts. But today, he's definitely wearing his educational hat as head of historical performance at the Royal Academy of Music. Joining us here in London as well, harpsichordist and conductor Matthew Halls, who's making quite a name for himself in the opera world. He's founder of Retrospect Ensemble, and he's just been announced as the new director of the Oregon Bach Festival in America. So welcome to all three of you. Hello.
Hello, hello, thank you.
And let's start with a question for each of you in turn. Ladies first. Delma, is the early music industry in this country looking after its future?
Ah, that's a really interesting one, Kate. Having just had the Young Artist Competition, I was disturbed by, if you like, the lack of early music ensembles that were putting themselves forward to take part in the competition. Not that there aren't wonderful individual musicians. It seems at the moment that there isn't so much time for a group of musicians to get together, and the majority of people who were coming forward to the competition of a very high standard were studying at the Schola in Basel or in The Hague or somewhere, as it were, within Central Europe.
Right, well, that's a provocative start, isn't it? So I'm going to go straight to you, Lawrence. How do you work on ensembles? How do you do your nurturing at the Royal Academy of Music here in London?
Well, obviously, ensembles are very, very important to any musician. Chamber music, I think, is always the most wonderful way in which to grow as a musician, because it sort of uses all your skills, really. You've got to have your technical ability, but that in no way gets you very far. You've actually got to have your antennae out. You've got to play in tune with other people. You've got to sort of have that wonderful sixth sense of knowing what's going on around you. But picking up on what Delma's just said, I think actually part of the truth of that is that it's very hard to be a student in this country now. The constraints on your time are enormous. Most of the students, for instance, I have at the Royal Academy of Music all have to work. They have quite rigid schedules outside their studies. We encourage as much ensemble playing as possible. But I think one of the things that I'm trying to address is really the way of timetabling ensembles. But as we all know, actually one of the most joyous parts of chamber music is having hours and hours with your friends just to play music through. And that's actually one of the best ways of getting better.
Well, one thing I've always admired about the competition in York is that it's not open to pot hunters. I mean, you've got to present two completely different programmes, maybe within the same sort of repertoire, but you've got to show that you haven't just got together to learn three pieces to enter a competition, and that's always worked very well. Let's turn to Matthew Halls. I think Delma and Lawrence and I can agree that you are the youngest person involved in this discussion.
I mean,
you were a music student at Oxford, as far back ago as the 90s, weren't you? But things must have changed even since you were putting on concerts at Oxford.
Yes, I think they have. And I'm going to pick up a little bit on what we've just been discussing from my own perspective as someone who really came from a very broad musical background and didn't really know what I was going to do when I finished university and saw early music as one option amongst several. And certainly what I noticed in the mid-90s when I was leaving university was that there was no shortage of musicians in the same position as me who were straddled between the two worlds. And that is to say that there were a lot of people who, as well as experimenting with the period instruments, were also pursuing interests in modern string quartet playing and modern orchestral playing. And I noticed at that stage that that was quite an English phenomenon, whereas contemporaries of mine in Holland and Switzerland, I was regularly coming across people who had been learning the harpsichord from the age of six. They'd never touched a pianoforte. So actually, I was intrigued and was meeting people for the first time who had dedicated the best part of their educational years playing only early music. And of course, in this country, I think that would be a very unique situation to find. We come from a more broad musical educational background, and that might be why we're noticing that there are more people from the continent who are, let's call it, super specialising in a way that perhaps people in this country aren't to the same extent.
Well, we're going to hear some more music now, back to the York Early Music Festival Young Artists Competition, and music from the next two finalists. So first, let's hear from members of the Sebastian Chamber Players.
Violins are Alex Woods and Daniel Lee, and then
Ezra Seltzer, cello, and Jeffrey Grossman, harpsichord. That's me.
The cellist, Ezra, the other violinist, Daniel, and I, we've played together since we were about 14. We met at summer camp when we were young and have just always had opportunities to continue playing with each other. And Jeff's come with us more recently. But, you know, it's sort of a fluid group. Like, we like to play with singers sometimes and other instruments. So chamber players sort of helps us to not necessarily define ourselves just as a trio sonata.
Sebastian Chamber Players from America, playing music by François Couperin. The fourth finalists were again from France, and they entertained us with another helping of French Baroque music. The members of Les Ombres play flute, violin, gamba, cello and harpsichord.
Margot Blanchard, and I'm playing viola da gamba.
Sylvain Sartre, and I'm playing traverso.
Nadja Le Saunier plays harpsichord. Jonathan Peschek plays cello.
And with me, Varoujan Donillon plays violin. We formed in 2006 in the Schola Cantorum. We are 10 people normally, and we focus on research to find new repertoire. We work a lot of Bibliothèque Nationale de France. The first project for us, the first recording last November with a new piece of François Colin de Blamont, Surintendant de la Musique sous Louis XV. And so it's the basis of our ensemble, French repertoire.
Thank you. The musicians of the ensemble Les Ombres with La Laborde by Rameau, part of their contribution to the finals of the York Early Music Festival Young Artists Competition in July. Delma Tomlin, you were saying earlier that they have a great advantage, Les Ombres.
They do, as a lot of French ensembles do indeed, because they are taken in residence, and Les Ombres have been in residence at the Ambrenet Festival, and they're just about to move into another residency with a theatre for the next 3 years. And again, that sort of sense of nurture as an ensemble will make a huge difference, because as Laurence was saying earlier, what people need is the time to work together and to listen to each other and to intuitively, if you like, understand how that small group worked together. And it's about resources, of course it is, but they have that, as you say, huge advantage.
Laurence Cummings, what are the options for young early music performers when they leave college?
I think the truth is, compared to when I was leaving college, things are fairly limited in terms of actually earning your living straight away. But perseverance is the key. And they're so resourceful. They put on concerts themselves. There are student-led performances at Handel House all the time, for example, in London. And I think that the advice I would give to any young musician leaving college is to keep going. Do play chamber music, because that is the way you improve. And then just be around. And there is still work out there, which is great. But as you touched on earlier, Kate, the recording's really over for us, I think, as far as a means of making money. But having said that, there are so many small record labels actually producing really exciting projects, which very often we have to put on ourselves. But nonetheless, they are very exciting.
And Matthew Halls, I'm reminded that when you and I first met, I was guest soloist and you were continuo harpsichordist virtuoso
with the European Union.
Tell us about how that works.
Well, of course, that's a very special opportunity open to young musicians leaving conservatoire and university education. And I was very, very lucky to be accepted onto that six-month extended crash course in orchestral playing, let's call it that. It was an exceedingly special opportunity for somebody, again, who was not quite convinced that it was the right thing, but absolutely wanted to throw himself into the deep end, and to suddenly have that exposure to musicians of the highest calibre and to the wonderful guest directors that they assemble, and also to be amongst musicians from a very large geographical catchment area and to be sharing ideas. And it was a very, very exciting thing to be involved in. And of course, since leaving the orchestra, I've not severed all my ties, because I've gone back several times as a tutor, and I'm always excited to see that the energy and the passion for this group hasn't diminished in any way.
Would you say that the essential thing is actually to form a group and put concerts on yourself to get some attention?
I think that's very important. Yes.
I think it's also important as a musician, not just to get attention and a way into the profession, but of course it is a great way in. It just helps you nurture yourself, because I think that's one of the things that happens in the UK a lot. We sort of hothouse musicians. We get them to a certain standard, which in a way they have to be in order to try and get any orchestral work in this country, because it moves so fast. You can't be hanging around. You have to be absolutely locked into the group straight away, or you won't be asked again. So there's that hothouse process, and they get fabulous opportunities at all the colleges. We have, for instance, the monthly Bach Cantata series, which gives the students a real eye into a professional world. But chamber music is the way you can nurture yourself after you leave. And I very saddened to hear Delma talk about the students from the UK not applying and not coming up and producing the goods for the competition. But I hope we can up our game.
You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and my guests, Laurence Cummings, Matthew Halls and Delma Tomlin. We're talking about the future for this new generation of people who want to play and sing early music. And we're hearing more from the York Early Music Festival Young Artists Competition. Here's a group from Switzerland, and they're called L'Istante.
My name is Anaïs Chen.
My name is Johannes Keller.
And our group is L'Istante. L'Istante, our name, comes from the Italian word for the instant, the moment. We mean with this the moment of the live performance, which is irretrievable.
In this group, we mainly play early Baroque and Baroque repertoire, because this is the music that I personally love the most.
Thank you.
My name's Helen Roberts. I play the cornetto in Habsburg Camerata. The other two members of our ensemble are John McKean, who plays the organ, Matthew Lonson, who plays the violin.
I'm Caroline Ritchie, and I play the viola da gamba.
Nathaniel Wood, I play baroque trombone, a.k.a. sackbut.
We all studied together at the Schola Cantorum in Basel in Switzerland. At least four of us did. And we were interested in forming an ensemble to explore early 17th century chamber music, but we needed an organist. And John McKean had studied with Nathaniel Wood, our trombonist, in the States, and he was studying in Freiburg, which is quite nearby. So we all came together, and it's been going ever since. That was about 2 years ago.
Deciding on a name was quite a long and arduous process. It involved many hours of sitting together and going through sources for ideas.
Yeah, finally we decided to reflect the primary sort of core of our repertoire, which is music from mainly sort of Austria and the courts of the Habsburg princes and dukes during the 17th century. So we went with Habsburger Camerata.
We're fascinated by this repertoire because it's not a part of the mainstream early music concert culture these days. You hear more Italian 17th century music, but very little of the music from the Habsburg courts. And there's a wonderful, wonderful sonatas and instrumental pieces in there. Many undiscovered things still, because a lot of the libraries have only come into public access since the Cold War ended. So there is lots of repertoire to discover, and we hope we can make a place for it on the concert platform.
Exactly, especially since what we do, blending wind and string instruments together in small format chamber music, is quite unusual, although it was an absolutely commonplace practice in the 17th century.
Thank you.
The Habsburger Camerata with music by Antonio Bertali. Well, as well as all the 18th century music and from earlier centuries that you would expect, perhaps, in an early music competition, a couple of this year's finalists chose to specialise in performances of 19th century music on period instruments. Borromini String Quartet are a group from the UK, and we also had in the competition the Den Haag Piano Quintet from Japan and the Netherlands, and they gave us a performance of Hummel's E-flat minor piano quintet. I'm very struck by the fact that that's quite a way into the 19th century. So perhaps it's a way for young performers to forge a career path with the music that everybody already knows and loves. In the studio with me, I have on my right, Lawrence, who's director of a Handel festival. On my left, Matt, who's just been appointed director of a Bach festival. Now, how far away from Handel and Bach do you two go, or do you plan to go, Matt?
Well, looking at the format of the festival that I will inherit in 2013, I can say that really Bach is the custodial figure, but the artistic remit of the festival is much, much larger. And in fact, it's a festival that embraces music from all sorts of periods inspired by Bach or part of the Bach legacy. So from my perspective, of course, that's a very broad artistic remit.
For me, actually, I have no great ambition to move into the 19th century. I mean, I love the music, and so I was going to answer what I get up to in my own private studio is a matter for me.
No concern of mine.
And me and the keyboards there. But I think that there's every justification, though, for young musicians to take on what is deemed more familiar music. But of course, in a sense, by revisiting it with original instruments, you're actually recloaking it anyway, so it can be just as shocking for the modern listeners who are expecting to hear it a certain way, you know, and it suddenly doesn't sound like it does on their CD at home.
Well, we've talked an awful lot about instrumental music, but hang on, I'm a singer here sitting right in the middle. I think it's time we heard some vocal music. Let's go now to the penultimate group among the finalists of the York competition. This is an all-female a cappella group from Belgium, calling themselves Encantarsh.
Hello, we are Encantarsh. I am the soprano, Sarah Abrams. Next to me is standing the alto, Soetkin Baptiste. And we have two more mezzo-sopranos, Kerlene van Nevel and Wanna Organ.
We got together in the conservatory where we studied our music education. We found each other actually in the course that's named Chamber Music, and then specialized to early music.
The name Encantar is a Spanish word, and it means enchanting, and also we thought about that name because the word cantare is also in it. So it was really, yeah, enchanting is what we try to do with the voices. We try to enchant the public and by singing, so it was the most perfect name we could think of.
We just choose music that fits for our ensemble, because in the first place it's not easy to find music for four female voices. Most of the music that we sing is written for male singers. So that's always a big aim for us, to search this music. And there is not really a lot.
Yes, it's a total different sound. It's way up high and it's, yeah,
softer.
It's softer, but it can also be more
harsh,
penetrating.
Yes.
If we look for the really high notes, then in a big church where there is a lot of acoustics, that sound is really typical female, of course.
Thank you.
My eyes have grown dim with weeping. Caligaverunt oculi mei, a setting of Psalm 25 by Paolo Antonio del Bivi, sung by the Belgian vocal ensemble Encantage. Well, chaps, Matthew and Lawrence, you work a great deal with singers, both of you. And, of course, Delma, you'll remember there was a staggering success by some non-winners in the competition in York a few years ago.
Indeed.
A little group called Stile Antico, mm-hmm. who were about to give up. They all thought perhaps they ought to go and get proper jobs, and they didn't know how they were going to do. And they won the audience prize. And there were those in the hall, I think, who really thought they should have won the competition. But fortunately for them, a very influential lady from the recording industry, this is not commonplace, as Lawrence has already said, was one of the judges, and she signed them up straight away. And look how well they've done since. So, Delma, do you think people should be forming vocal groups?
Oh, very much so. And we are blessed in York with an extraordinary wealth of very good singers, both amateur and early music singers and semi-professional singers.
It's one thing to be a solo singer. That's a different path in a way, isn't it? But what about these vocal ensembles that this country is famous for? Is it just something... Do we need more of them?
Well, I think what is most interesting, and I still think actually commercially an avenue that hasn't been explored enough, is the combination of voices and instruments. Conductors still make the cataclysmic mistake of saying singers and musicians, meaning orchestral players, and that sort of sums it up for me. They're not different animals. We're all doing the same thing. In fact, all the treatises tell you to play your instrument as if you're singing with the human voice, because that is the perfect exponent of music. So I'm a big fan of mixing it all up. I mean, the Baroque ensembles, obviously, it's very easy to have cantatas, and even operas in Baroque are chamber music, really. That, for me, is the most interesting thing, is the combination and bringing these two worlds together again.
Matthew, what about the visual aspect? We keep on being told we're in a visual culture now. It's all very lookist. And even choirs that have hitherto been quite happy to stand still and sing, they're all now learning bits of choreography to take part in the Choir of the Year competition. How important do you think this is for a new young ensemble?
I find that a very difficult question, because my own exposure to young choral groups is not one where I'm experiencing new modes of stage manner. I'm not being introduced to new ways of presenting a concert. Maybe I don't get out enough, but that's my own experience up to this point. But I am aware that with all the recent television coverage of choral music and of the X Factor, of course, that we're in the process of reevaluating the entire music profession, I think, at the moment, from a marketing point of view and from a programming and from an outreach point of view. And nobody quite knows the solution at the moment, where everything's heading. I live in the hope, rather, that it's still about what you hear rather than what you see, which is what makes a vocal ensemble or an orchestra great. I would feel very uncomfortable living in a world were that not the case.
Had we but world enough and time, I mean, we could actually be delving into promotion, websites, marketing, all the things that musicians now have to do. You cannot just leave college and sit at home and wait for people to ring you up. It's even more so than that. But I'm getting the impression, Lawrence, Matthew and Delma, that there is sort of still a hope in these hard economic times. And if people want to specialise in early music, it's still worth their doing so. Would you all agree?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the wonderful thing is, as Delma says, the standard is so high, and it's getting higher and higher, I think. And the sheer joy that these young musicians bring to the performances is infectious.
Absolutely.
Well, as we come to the end of the programme, thank you very much to Matthew Halls, Lawrence Cummings and Delma Tomlin, who is now, you're going to tell us, Delma, who won the competition and why.
It was a vocal ensemble called Profeti della Quinta, who are basically Israelis working and studying at the Schola in Basel. Their sound is unique, I think you could safely say. Extraordinary cantus, high-voiced mix. Again, they sing beautifully together. They've had the time, goes back to that, of being able to work together to blend their ensemble. And, of course, the repertoire, for us at least, is very unusual and I think will be very compelling for people.
Well, let's end with the deserved winners of the York competition. They're part of the future of early music. And before we hear them sing, here they are introducing themselves.
I'm Eilam Rotem, the bass of Ensemble Profeti della Quinta, with Doron Schleifer, David Feldman, Dino Luti, and Dan Dunkelblum.
So we are a vocal male ensemble, and four of us are Israelis, and Dino is Swiss. We all met in Basel because we studied there at the Schola Cantorum Basiliensis.
We specialize in 16th and 17th century music, and a quite special thing about our group is that we are all male, and the altus part is sang by a high tenor rather than a countertenor or a female voice, and it really changed the sonority of the ensemble, and this is how we believe it was back then.
We aim at the performance practice that was, as much as we know, used at the time, at the 16th, 17th century. So we also work with the part books. We read, each reads from his own part only.
The copies of the original.
Copies of the originals, facsimiles.
So we don't use modern scores, and we have to count much better and practice much more.
But we believe it gives the music a new fluency.
In this program, we sang music by Salomone Rossi, which was the first composer to introduce polyphony into the synagogue in Hebrew. He lived in Mantova in the beginning of the 17th century. And apart from composing music for the synagogue, he was a completely normal court musician at the Gonzagas, along with Monteverdi, and he wrote a lot of instrumental music and madrigals.
As we are four Israelis and Hebrew speakers, so it's a choice that is natural for us to do. But we also choose a lot of the Italian repertoire of the time, which fits very well this five voices formation.
And apropos performance practice, this publication by Rossi has a very special feature, since the writing of Hebrew is from right to left and the music is from left to right. So this is another interesting challenge.
Thank you.
Applause there for the vocal ensemble Profeti della Quinta with that setting of Psalm 8, Lamnatseach al Hagitit by Salomone Rossi, recorded at the York Early Music Festival's Young Artists Competition this July. And it brings to an end today's edition of the Early Music Show. It was presented by Catherine Bott, with guests Delma Tomlin, Lawrence Cummings and Matthew Halls. The programme was produced in Manchester by Les Pratt. And you might like to know the Early Music Show now has its own weekly podcast featuring edited highlights from the programme's full details on the Radio 3 website.
It's 1952. You're standing among the racks of LPs, remember those? In the flagship store of Liberty Record Shops at the junction of Madison Avenue and 50th Street in Manhattan. You're browsing idly through the discs when one of the clerks puts on a record of music that has everyone around you stand stock still and listen. Imagine hearing this for the very first time. Yes, there was a time, not so long ago, when virtually no one on the planet would have known the name Antonio Vivaldi. He's my composer of the week, every weekday this week at noon, and again in the evening at 6:30, here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to this Sunday afternoon, and at 5:00, we've the choir with Alan Jones, and he's joined by composer and pianist Will Todd to discuss choral music influenced by jazz. Music during the programme includes works by Todd himself, by Dave Brubeck and Duke Ellington, and a large piece by Gwilym Simcock called I Prefer the Gorgeous Freedom. That's the choir with Alan Jones at 5:00 this afternoon. It's a little after 2:00, and now the Sunday Concert, a recital recorded a few days ago. And for it, we rejoin Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Wigmore Hall in London, where we have the chance to accompany Schubert on the first of his great musical voyages in song, the cycle Die Schöne Müllerin, The Fair Maid of the Mill. And we're going to be in the best company imaginable, that of baritone Christian Gerhaer and pianist Gerald Huber. They've worked together since they were boys in Munich. Gerald is the son of Christian's violin teacher, and Gerhaer calls them musical brothers. Their recordings of Schubert's song cycles have been greeted with rapture, so naturally this concert has been sold out since booking opened. The song cycle, Die Schöne Müllerin, was first published in 1824, 20 songs to poems by Wilhelm Müller, which colour in the story of an apprentice miller who follows a sparkling brook to a mill, where he falls in love with the miller's daughter. He is so young, this boy. Perhaps his heart hasn't been broken before, because when the girl swoons instead for a dashing huntsman, he cannot understand his own feelings and becomes consumed by morbid fantasies about death. The last song is the brook's lullaby for the young man. Has he yielded to its cold embrace? Die Schöne Müllerin seems to tell an artless, rustic tale, and many of the songs are in simple verse form. But the cycle is really about the inexorable turning of love's grindstone, powered by the constant movement of the water wheel. And as we listen to the poetry of the songs, the sounds of the brook are forever in our ears. Schubert's work sets 20 poems to music, but Wilhelm Müller originally wrote a sequence of 25 poems, including a prologue and an epilogue, designed to distance the listener from the sadness of the story. In tonight's recital, Christian Gerhaer is going to declaim 3 other poems from within the cycle: Life in the Mill, First Pain, Last Joy, and The Forget-Me Flower. The seeming simplicity and the ambiguity of this cycle make it a tremendous challenge for performers. In Christian Gerhaer's view, although singers are usually thought of as artists, a singer, he says, is to a great degree a craftsman. The main artist is the composer and the poet. You need to be honest with the work. The less of your personal life you put into the interpretation, the better.
I think also the Schöne Müllerin is sometimes relatively misunderstood as a story between two people, a normal love story, which is then broken up because of a third one. This is not the case in the Schöne Müllerin. It is, as the poet says, it is a monodrama. It's only in the head of the miller what is going on. There is no relationship between them. They meet maybe twice in the cycle. One time very shortly, when she asks him to give a green ribbon, because she wants to use it for the hunter, which is humiliating afterwards. But this is not the main coming together. The main thing is Tränenregen, where he somehow persuaded her to come with him to the brook where it's so nice, and then he's only talking to himself and regarding, in the end, his own death. And having a miller who guides her to a little beautiful brook, but is not able to talk one word to her, it's just not worthy to be there. And she says, okay, it's starting to rain, and that's not my place. I have to work. And it's just too irrational how he is for her. She doesn't know anything about him, and he is not able to tell her anything about himself. It is just an adventure inside his head. And he has some persons to speak with. It's the brook. It's a symbol for himself. It's the alter ego. And also for the miller maiden, he has an alter ego. That's the Vergissmeinnicht, this blue flower, forget-me-not. And so he deals with many symbols. Everybody becomes a symbol, or gets a symbol, like the male pigs in The Hunter are a symbol for the hunter himself. The heaven is maybe a symbol for death and eternity in this cycle, and so on. So he is dealing with these symbols and puts them into a logic a relationship, so that everything is in a thought as a phantasmagory, clear and right. He even proves in this way that she must love him. But she doesn't, because the reality is something different from the phantasmagory. And this is the real theme of Die Schöne Müllerin.
And now here is Christian Gerhauer with pianist Gerold Huber to perform Schubert's song cycle, Die Schöne Müllerin, The Fair Maid of the Mill.
Das Wandern. Vom Wasser haben wir's gelernt, vom Wasser. Vom Wasser haben wir's gelernt, vom Wasser. Das hat nicht Rast bei Tag und Nacht, ist stets auf Wanderschaft bedacht. Das Wasser, das Wasser, das Wasser, das Wasser. Das sehen wir auch den Rädern ab, den Rädern. Das sehen wir auch den Rädern ab, den Rädern. Nicht gerne stille stehen, die sich ein Tag nicht müde gehen. Die Räder, die Räder, die Räder, die Räder. Die Steine, selbst so schwer sie sind, die Steine. Die Steine, selbst so schwer sie sind, die Steine. Sie tanzen mit dem Mond herein und wollen gar noch schneller sein. Die Steine, die Steine, die Steine, die Steine. O wandern, wandern, meine Lust, o wandern. O wandern, wandern, meine Lust, o wandern. Und Frau Meisterin,
lass mich in Frieden weiterziehen und wandern und wandern und wandern.